Welcome to the WBGO Journal. I'm Doug Doyle. Outgoing New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy may have made public radio history by signing a bill into law during our Ask Governor Murphy program.
Farmland and Woodland Tax Assessment Integrity and Investment Act and Senators Joe Panaccio and Tony Bucco, Assemblyman Bill Spearman, are the names at the top of the masthead.
WBGO's John Kalish has the story of a Crown Heights man who has created an urban homestead that includes a vegetable garden, fruit trees, and chickens.
Crown Heights people don't seem to like greenery. I personally grew into it because my grandfather owned a beautiful farm in Huron.
And I'll chat with director Ryan Sarno and actress Gabriella Piazza about the Diner Anthologies.
I play a seasoned thief who finds herself at this diner for her last meal.
All this coming up today on the WBGO Journal. New Jersey gets ready for a new governor as former Congresswoman Mikey Sherrill takes office on Tuesday, January 20th, with an inaugural ceremony at NJPAC in Newark. On the last episode of WBGO's Ask Governor Murphy call-in show, Phil Murphy did something that's never happened before. He signed a bill into law during the show. The legislation amends the Farmland Assessment Program to make sure only real farmers are eligible to get a property tax break for growing agricultural products, not homeowners who plant a garden on their land so they can qualify for a tax benefit. Governor Murphy got the idea from an Ask Governor Murphy listener, Jack Curtis from Mendon, who called into the show and complained about fake farmers duping the system. Curtis was on the line Wednesday night as host Nancy Solomon watched Governor Murphy sign the measure.
I want to say thank you first, Nancy. First to you for having such a wonderful show that allows an average citizen to call up and get in touch with the governor. And then for the governor, thank you for being so kind and so nice to meet with me.
Jack, that means a lot, seriously. So this is Senate Bill number 3446. I always read the synopsis. Farmland and Woodland Tax Assessment Integrity and Investment Act. As I mentioned, Senators Joe Panaccio and Tony Bucco, Assemblyman Bill Spearman are the names at the top of the masthead. So I am literally...
We may be making public radio history here with a bill signing
right here,
on the air live.
So first pen I'm going to hand to Tyler Jones is going to go to Jack Curtis. You'll get that to Jack, right? And then another cool thing, it's the 14th, right? 14th day
yes.
of January 2026.
I don't know if you can hear the scratching of the
pen.
Pen
number two goes to Nancy Solomon.
Oh, thank
because
you.
She introduced me to Jack.
You can hear the entire Ask Governor Murphy program on the WBGO Facebook page. It is legal to raise chickens in New York City. WBGO's John Kalish has the story of a young man in the Crown Heights section of Brooklyn whose backyard chicken coop is part of an urban homestead that includes a vegetable garden and fruit trees.
In the Lubavitcher Hasidic community in Crown Heights, 21-year-old Daniel Yerushalmi raises chickens, grows fruits and vegetables. His compost pile has decomposing eggplants, cucumbers, and a citrus fruit used for ritual purposes during the Jewish High Holy Days.
This is from the local yeshiva down the block. So whatever they have that's going bad, they give to me for either the chickens or I compost it. It's a lot better than going to the trash, obviously. A lot of Crown Heights people don't know what compost is. They just wonder why I'm piling up vegetables in my front yard.
Yerushalmi is an Iranian Jew. Both his parents were born in Iran. His father, a dentist, came to America in 1979. His mother is a pharmacist at a municipal hospital in Coney Island. He acknowledges he's a bit different from his neighbors in this religious community.
Crown Heights people don't seem to like greenery. I personally grew into it because my grandfather owned a beautiful farm in Huron. He had acres and acres of land, trees, fruit trees, fig trees, everything. And he dropped all that, came to America when he was 70. A lot of my inspiration came from him.
Yerushalmi calls his urban farming project the Crown Heights Homestead. He tried to grow corn and wheat, but that didn't work out. He was able to grow 10-foot-tall sunflowers along with tomatoes, cucumbers, and peppers. He has a cherry tree and fig trees. Some of the fig trees were propagated from branches of fig trees his family brought to America from Iran over the years. Yerushalmi is following traditional Jewish law that forbids consuming a tree's fruit for a few years.
It basically says that for the first 3 years of fruit, you're not allowed to eat the fruit on the tree. You have to let it fall off. You cannot have any benefit from it.
His chicken coop is in the cement backyard where I met the 20 hens in his flock and watched as he retrieved a single egg from the chicken coop he built. The coop is insulated and has an automatic door that comes up in the morning, then back down at night.
One of the reasons I keep the chickens here is because it's surrounded by other houses, so there's not a lot of wind. You know, if I had them in the front, they might not survive.
Yerushalmi says the hens laid a lot more eggs when they were younger, but as they age, they've been laying a lot less. Believe it or not, there are predators in his Crown Heights neighborhood that are hungry for this local poultry.
Crown Heights does have raccoons and stuff like that. I've only seen one on this block once. It was actually on the security cameras. It triggered the motion alarm. They can't get into the coop. However, 3 years ago, I did have a possum show up in the middle of the night and kill a chicken that got stuck outside. At 3 a.m., we had our windows open and everything, and we just heard a chicken screaming really, really loud. And I ran down in my pajamas to find it, and I put it in the coop. I thought everything was well, but, you know, 3 days later, it died, and I didn't even realize it had this huge gouge just taken out of it.
Yerushalmi has close to 1,000 followers on Instagram for his Crown Heights homestead account. Some of his posts are about his garden and chickens, but he also produces videos about woodworking and DIY projects.
All right, this video is dedicated to all the useless Crown Heights people who have never picked up a drill in their life. Today I'm going to show you how to use it, what kinds to use. So there are two basic kinds. There's a drill and there's a driver.
Yerushalmi has a knack for tapping into free resources. He has a sideline of selling firewood cut up from fallen trees and pruned branches in the neighborhood. A local liquor store gives him wooden wine crates. Another source of free lumber comes from wooden shipping pallets he gathers.
So the average person would just walk right past this pallet thinking it's trash. But it's actually really nice oak wood. You could tell by all the black splotches around the nails. The nail is actually oxidizing the wood, which happens with oak. Take it home, and then cut it into pieces.
Yerushalmi has made a bunch of birdhouses from the pallet wood. A maple tree in his front yard has close to a dozen birdhouses attached to it. His appreciation of bird life reminded me of St. Francis of Assisi, who preached to the birds in 13th century Italy. Yerushalmi realizes that he comes off as an odd duck to many of the other Hasidic Jews in Crown Heights because of his agricultural passions. For now, he's living under his parents' roof.
If I had an option, which I will in the future, to move out, I would definitely not stay in Crown Heights or the city at all.
Wherever he goes when he leaves Brooklyn, Yerushalmi will no doubt take his flock with him. Last summer, he took all 20 hens to his job at a sleepaway camp in the Midwest, transporting them more than 800 miles in a rented truck. For the WBGO Journal, I'm John Kalish.
The Diner Anthologies is a 5-episode anthology series designed specifically for YouTube and YouTube TV. Each episode tells a standalone story crafted by a different creative team, with subtle connective threads linking the episodes into a larger narrative. What that narrative's all about, we're going to find out. Each installment plays like a short film, prioritizing cinematic visuals and emotional storytelling in a concise, under 13-minute episode format.
Hi, table for one.
Three victims have been identified in what they're calling a multi-state trafficking case. The investigation remains active.
Don't start with me.
Get someone turn this song off!
Authorities say the victims were each stabbed over 7 times.
When was the last time you saw her?
I was young, but I remember everything.
Tell me what happened then, Billy.
I can't defend you if I don't know the whole story.
Why are you doing this?
I just missed us.
I've been having these crazy nightmares. Feels so real.
Enough!
The Diner Anthology series premieres January 25th and is led by showrunner Ryan Sarno. He's from Underworld Productions and brings together five distinct filmmaking teams. Ryan, thanks for joining us today.
Of course. Thank you for having us. We're super excited to be a part of the show.
And one of the stars of the show is Gabriella Piazza, who is seen in pictures like Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning, and CIS, The Many Saints of Newark. Great to see you, Gabriella.
Thank you so much. So happy to be here, Doug.
So I've seen the trailer, and I'm fascinated by it. It looks like it's going to be a very exciting series, and I can't wait to see how they're all connected, set up in all these different booths at a diner. Well, of course, New Jersey, we're all about diners anyway here. So, Ryan, tell us about how this idea came about.
Yeah, so about 2 years ago, we opened Underworld in Long Island, and we started building out sets for people to come and rent. We have a hospital room, we have an interrogation room, a jail cell, and we decided to build a 50s diner because who doesn't love to film in like a nostalgic 50s diner? And it actually quickly became one of our biggest, most popular sets. So I'm an indie filmmaker. Me and Gabriella have worked on so many projects together in the past. And said, what if it's a show that's based in the diner? Because there's so many different stories that could take place inside of a diner. Like the options are endless, season one, season two. There could be so many seasons, so many stories. So we just started putting our heads together and coming up with a bunch of different stories, got to script writing, and it just kind of took off from there.
Think about all the stories that are told between people in a diner over the years, right? That's where you learn the secrets. That's where you learn the dirt. That's where you learn maybe about a new love or anything that could be like that. So really looking forward to this as I mentioned it. Gabriella, when people see this, they're going to see you in a little bit of a different light, to say the least. Can you talk about your character?
Yeah, so I play a seasoned thief who finds herself at this diner for her last meal before she gets booked for a very long time. And it was so amazing to sort of play the antithesis of what people may assume I can play, right? And shout out to our incredible SFX makeup artist, Mackenzie Brooks. She made me look like I had been through the ringer. And in the story, I happen to actually do go through a very, fun and exciting fight scene. So you'll stay tuned for that. But it was really an amazing opportunity to play something so different than what I normally get asked to play and bring that type of character to life.
Ryan mentioned that you two indeed have worked on several projects together, including some of the other members of the cast that we'll get to in a bit, too. What is it about Ryan and you that connect?
Honestly, I have never met somebody so driven to tell stories, no matter how hard it looks like it will be. You know, so Ryan is an incredible set designer. As he mentioned, he built all of these sets from the ground up. And I said, hey, for my episode, I want my flashback to take place in a bathroom, but I need this bathroom to look a certain way. So we should just go scout it and we should do whatever. And Ryan's like, no, I'll just build it. I'm like, what do you mean you'll just build it from the ground up? And so lo and behold, Ryan built a bathroom that was not only a fully functioning bathroom, but everything inside of the bathroom moved. So the camera could get behind the tub could be pushed forward, the toilet could move, the walls moved. So normally in a bathroom, you're really tight. It's really hard to get a camera around. But that's why I love working with Ryan, because there are very rare times where Ryan's like says the words, we can't do that. It's mostly always, we'll figure out how to do it. And that is such an incredible asset to have in a creative partner. Like, he's just unbelievable. And then he actually does it, which you're like, how the heck did you do that? Like, what? But that's why.
So directing this has to be challenging enough. Where did you learn the skills to create sets?
I actually took a intro to direction, screen direction in college, and I directed a little film. And my teacher, we screened it in class, and the professor was like, where did you get these sets? Like, where did you build? Like, how did you make this? And I was like, I just made them in my basement. And he was like, what? He's like, you need to be a production designer. Have you ever heard of like a production designer? And I'm like, no. And he's like, all right, so this is where it all begins. So ever since then, I did so much research on production design, and I always kind of had it in me a little bit, but obviously you got to learn all the, you know, the ins and the outs of, you know, prop master, set building, set dressing, and it kind of just took off from there.
Tell me about this move, like to treat YouTube not as a secondary platform, but a real home for high quality cinematic short form television.
Yeah, YouTube is just, so we have been making a lot of short films. I made another series a few years ago, and then I just made my first feature film a few years back. And usually the process with that is, you know, you make your film and then you keep it on a password protected link and you submit it to the film festivals. And then after you do your film festival run, you have to, you know, get distribution for it, a sales agent, and pitch it. And it's a really long process. And sometimes it could get very frustrating because your film is not getting seen by a wider audience and you kind of have to keep it on this password protected link. So I think one of the biggest things with this project and the most exciting things with this project is that our work is just going to be put out there for the world to see finally. Like, not a lot of people have, a lot of people have seen our work, obviously, because it's been all over in film festivals and in a ton of places, but now we could finally put it out to a broader, bigger audience and really push it and get a lot more eyes on it. So I think a lot of things are changing with social media and content creation and the way things are being seen and viewed today. So we said, what if we put this, I mean, it sounds crazy, like making an entire series to just, you know, put on YouTube, but I mean, it opens us up to so much more viewership, a bigger audience, and an opportunity to be bigger, you know, than we've been before. So that was kind of like our mindset behind that.
And many people just have YouTube TV. Yeah. That's like their primary way of watching anything these days. Gabriella, your father was involved with the FBI.
Yes.
Is he like the fact that you're a felon in this new series?
You know, it is so funny. My poor father, you know, my first movie ever was to play a gangster's wife. And The Many Saints of Newark. And my father, when he first, you know, was in, out, I mean, hopefully he's retired now, so I think I can talk about this, but he was in organized crime. So we were never allowed to really watch any of those types of films or The Sopranos until much later. And now he happens to be a big fan of The Sopranos. So I will say that that's an interesting turn of events. But I showed him my episode and he was like, you know, you're a really good bad guy. Like, he's like, you really are a good bad guy. It's tough to watch you be such a bad guy. But, you know, I said, Dad, one day I swear I will play a law enforcement officer for you. I promise. It's coming. I don't know when it's coming, but I swear I will be in uniform. So hopefully soon.
I love the idea that these characters and these stories will, you know, intertwine and connect, but we won't know exactly when and how they will. That's in Ryan's mind as the director, how he has molded this. I mean, we've seen similar things, just not in the short form, like White Lotus. You know, you had a bunch of characters, and eventually you see how they interconnect, even though they're at the same hotel. Their stories will eventually connect in a way. Also, to me, when I first saw this, I thought of American Horror Story, because I thought about characters intertwining. Anything that popped into mind about that, Ryan, when you were doing this?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, because American Horror Story is one of my favorite shows of all time. I mean, I've been watching since season one came out, and I just always loved the idea of each, you know, season being something different, and the characters could come back and repeat. Like season two, Gabriella could come back as somebody completely opposite of her character that she played, you know, season one, and all the other actors that we're always using and other things could just come back, and it can be a completely different show, but still the diner anthologies. So I've been obsessed with an idea like this for a really long time, and yeah, that's one of the leading reasons that show like was biggest inspiration for this, I think.
And if you've never caught American Horror Story, check out when Lady Gaga is in, because she's brilliant in that and
So
scary as
good.
heck. So
Yeah, that was one of her first acting gigs, I think, right after A Star Is Born.
Crazy.
Yeah, it was cool.
Gabrielle, you're not just an actress, but you put things together too. You're a writer and producer and things like that. So tell us a little bit about the fact that you connect with Ryan on different levels. I would imagine you're learning on the job as you go. You're growing as a total talent when it comes to this business.
Yeah, I think now, the way the industry is, I got into this actually. I was in corporate before, and like 10 years ago, I started acting and doing this whole thing. And the way that I started was I actually just quit my job and opened my own production company and made a movie. And I'm very glad I did because I think this industry now, you have to understand how filmmaking works to be a true asset on set in every sense. And I think actors nowadays, I personally, I'll speak for myself, don't like waiting for somebody to give me an opportunity. I'd rather go out and tell a story and make it on my own. And because I am able to learn from creators like Ryan and work alongside somebody who's making things all the time, it allows me to also tell the stories I want to tell, that like playing a seasoned thief who looks pretty rough around the edges, somebody may not cast me in something like that. So I have to write those stories and create those stories on my own. So I'm very grateful to sort of have come up the way that I've come up, is understanding that you can just make the movie yourself.
What's it like being in Mission Impossible with Tom Cruise?
I gotta tell you, everything and more. You get to one of those sets and you have a fear of, man, this movie's very expensive, large budget. There's no way this is going to be like, I hope to God that this is going to be everything I ever hoped, and it was. And to see creatives like Christopher McQuarrie and Tom and the entire cast and crew care about storytelling at a budget that is at, it restores hope for an actor like myself. They care so much about movies. Tom Cruise cares so much about just movies and cinema. And the director, Christopher McQuarrie, just cares so much about telling stories that it's so heartwarming. And also getting to watch Tom like do all of the stunts, you're like, and nope, sure as heck, he's crying on the show. Sure as heck, he's doing all the swimming stunts. He's jumping out of the plane that I'm flying him in, he's doing all of that. And it's just awesome. It's so cool.
He really keeps himself in great shape. If
For
anybody
sure.
saw Top Gun Maverick and he's running on the beach, you can go, what? He's keeping up with the stars of that show as well. And
Crazy.
yeah, it really is. And when I think about how you are approaching this show, I think about being at a diner. And maybe I'll ask you this, Ryan. My lady likes to look at everybody else's food. Oh, what are they eating over there? What is that? I don't know. After I watch this series, I get an idea. I might not want to know what they're eating. I don't want to look over there because there might be a Gabriella over there that's staring at me, and I might be in trouble.
That's so funny. Yeah, the diner, it's funny you say that, 'cause like the diner, crew, the waitress and waiters that work there, they're the ones really observing all the, like, we're kind of seeing a lot of it through them too and their reactions. And they're just like, what is going on today? Like at the diner today, like what? So it's funny how we see it through them too.
All right, for both of you, let's start with you, Gabrielle. What's your favorite diner food?
I love this question. I love a turkey club with extra mayo on the side. I'm a mayo girl. I don't care to admit it. Like I am, I love mayo. With extra mayo on the side, and I want a chocolate milk and a Diet Coke.
Once this series gets underway, I want you to be in makeup and I want you to go to your favorite diner and see what looks you get. For
Right.
right? Ryan, what's your favorite diner food?
Yeah, we actually should have done that for inspiration to see what it would have been
What
like. Maybe
people would have
season
been.
two, we'll dress up as our characters and go into a diner one day. Could be good for the script.
Yeah.
My favorite diner, my go-to, I always get breakfast every time I go to the diner, no matter what time of day it is. So I'm always getting like a side of like one pancake, two scrambled eggs, and some whole wheat toast. Love breakfast at a diner. Can never go wrong.
Gabriella isn't the only star of the diner anthologies. Also, there's McKinley Bletcher the third, as well as someone you have worked on many projects with, Sergio Acevedo from Law and Order, Saturdays, and your film The Greatest. Tell us a little bit more about the cast of this five-episode anthology, the Diner Anthologies.
Yeah, so Sergio was in my last film called The Greatest. That was a film that was set in 1960, and it was about a love story. It was kind of a love triangle between a husband and a wife who were married, had a stereotypical, life in the 1960s, and he meets a man in the city who's played by Sergio. And they fall in love and have a romance. And obviously, as we know, during that time, that was forbidden. So their story plays out on screen. His co-star is Isaac Neverla. And they play such a great dynamic together. It was such a beautiful thing to watch them on screen. And Isaac also plays a leading role in the series as well. And he's a producer on the project as well. And actually, Sergio is very good friends with McKinley, and that's how we met McKinley. And he plays alongside Sergio in episode number four as Sergio's lawyer. So that was an incredible dynamic. The two of them together was just so great on screen. We're so grateful to have all three of them be a part of this
Unbelievable
series.
actor,
Yeah.
McKinley and Sergio.
Gabriella, we've got to talk a little bit more about the many saints of Newark because, the Sopranos are ingrained in the history of television, not only
Yes.
in New Jersey, but forever. And several of those characters are no longer with us from that original series. But one of those who we love is Steven Van Zandt. He's still around and he's still making music with Bruce Springsteen and making
Love.
his own with Little Steven and the Disciples of Soul. He's such an incredible person. Did you get to meet some of the original cast members when you were doing The Many Saints of Newark?
Yes, Steven Van Zandt, I've met a few times. I still keep in touch with David Chase, and a very good friend of mine is Michael Gandolfini. He was in my most recent film. I got to talk to some of the original cast. Obviously, I played Christopher's mom in the prequel, so was able to sort of pick his brain about that in a little way. And it was just an amazing experience being on that set, and especially getting to watch Michael play Tony. Just pulls on your heartstrings. And Michael is just like his dad in the sense of knowing everyone's name on set, making everybody comfortable, shaking everybody's hand. On the day of the table read, I'm like, I don't know how the hell I got in here. They definitely made a mistake of letting me in here with all these incredible actors. And Michael came right up to me and made me feel so comfortable. And it was just like a big family on set and paying like homage to this incredible television show. So grateful to have experienced that. And David is still writing, and he's coming out with a new series. And he's the man and the nicest guy, coolest guy ever. And yeah, they're just great people. And there's no wonder why the series did so well, because they're such lovely, lovely people who made it.
For the Diner Anthologies to have a season two, what has to happen?
Yeah, so well, once you watch and see what happens, it will definitely leave you questioning, well, what now? Where do we go from here? But we have some ideas on the table. There are some things that we are talking about. But yeah, there's many different options that we can explore. It could be the very same diner that we're in. It could be a completely different diner with different set of stories, but same actors. There's many different ways that we could kind of go here. So I think that's a really exciting element of this story too.
The Diner Anthology is premiering on YouTube and YouTube TV. January 25th. We invite you to check it out on YouTube. And thanks to both of you. You're looking forward to this series.
Thank you,
Thank
Doug.
You
so
much.
Excited.
You can see the rest of my interview with Ryan Sarno and Gabriella Piazza on the WBGO YouTube channel. Thanks for listening to the WBGO Journal. I'm Doug Doyle. Join us next Saturday morning at 5:30 for another edition of the award-winning WBGO Journal. In the meantime, stay tuned to the world's greatest jazz and blues station, WBGO and WBGO.org.